All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Doug Thornton with the American Vindicta Show. Today's date is May 26, 2022. This is episode 127. We're going to be talking about active shooters and civil war. I don't want to be talking about active shooters and civil war. I want to be talking about other things than that. I got some stuff that Ariel, who's our independent journalist from our Raven Corps section, who's wrote some fantastic articles, I'd like to be reading to you. But at the rate that the news is going, I'm going to make those into independent recordings, and they will be on the YouTube and Rumble channels. There's a lot of stuff that I'm trying to get involved in right now, trying to get out of the house and go on a little bit of adventures and, try and take you guys with me and have some fun and just try to interject positivity back into this grotesque nation that we live in now. And I say grotesque because I am growing further and increasingly intolerable with the rhetoric from the left. We have had two horrific active shooters within the past 2 weeks. And all I hear is one side saying that the other side is wrong, the other side is evil, the other side wants children to die, the other side wants to protect murderers by not getting rid of guns, while yet the left, and I'm looking at you, New York, while the left increases the amount of felons that are released from state prison and also from their jails, and these men and women are rapists, they're on terrorism watch lists, the FBI monitors them, they're known gang members, alleged killers, or some that actually did murder people and were still released, pedophiles, child rapists, human traffickers, men and women who are putting drugs on the streets and into the hands of your children. There's some emotional response for you. That's what the left wants. They want a good emotional response. They want to distract you from what they're really doing, what they're really up to. And they use tragedies. They use the righteous blood of the innocent victims of these mass shootings to push forth agendas that they have been trying to push forth for at least a decade. Joe Biden was one of the biggest proponents of it. He's the one who got the assault weapons ban. We have had so many active shooters and shootings in general in all the states, red and blue areas, and yet we continue to turn this into a political issue. Do you know, in ancient history, when within the kingdoms of Europe, and this would be ancient Europe, when there was riots, when people were being oppressed by outside forces, what would happen is the kingdom would be forced to send their knights or armed militias accompanied by knights or other members of the king's armies, and they would go and fight back whatever terrorism or attacks were happening around the empire's people. That was a common treatise, a common way to deal with any type of force. Any type of use of force back then was met by greater uses of force. And you did it to the point that you didn't want people to come back and try it again. So you sent an army out there. The problem with all this is that the more we advance as a society, quote, advance as a society, the more we slip and fall upon our morals and our predispositions, The more we think that we have the high ground intellectually, and the more we learn to put the sword down, we tell ourselves, we lie to ourselves, that we are safer, that the men who carry the weapons are both evil and good. It just depends on what time of the day it is. I've been reading a lot, and my many of you listeners have been sending me stuff. And it's horrific what happened in Uvalde. And it's growing more horrific the more I'm being updated. And there are plenty of videos that are being shown. Don't know full context, but it's bad enough. Of law enforcement that's not allowing parents to go to the school, supposedly while the active shooter was still in the school. Now, I've seen anywhere between 30 minutes and 90 minutes where law enforcement was standing outside of the school and not responding inwards into the active shooter. I am under the assumption that Border Patrol agents responded. The Border Patrol Tactical Operations Team, I've worked in conjunction with every single one of their teams. Good guys. Their team is called BORTAC, and then also another team called BORSTAR. That's their medics, and they specialize in search and rescue along the border. These two teams were coming. These two teams were the ones that engaged the shooter and put the shooter down, especially one of the members of BORTAC who even took a grazing wound to the top of the head that he had to have stitches in, and thank God he didn't die. Supposedly he was just millimeters from the gunman. And I can only expect that if it wasn't for the fact that this one officer from BORTAC, this border agent, he more than likely just ran in there to stop the threat. It's something that we get taught, and I teach back quite a bit. It was taught to me many years ago, and you may have heard me say this, but within the realms of law enforcement, the best medicine to stop an active shooter is to stop the shooter, typically by means of greater to excessive force, meaning deadly force, right? So I have questions, and many of you do too. Why didn't the officers that were on the outside, the original officers that showed up, why didn't they respond in? Now, I don't want to jump all over this, and many people may hate on me for it. I just tell you that from my experience, I want the facts to come out. I'm not going to ignore the emotional outbursts from parents. I don't think anybody should. And I don't think the young lady that was arrested by the officers that were there while she was trying to get in the school, I don't think she should have been arrested. I'm not sure if she was. She may have just been detained. You would think that your humanity would kick in, and that if anything, they, detain the woman trying to calm her down and console her. Of course, how can you if your child is in the middle of a shooting inside of a school with possibly still the shooter alive? So my question goes to, based off of this presumption now, that's spreading like wildfire. If the officers were there for 40 minutes and did not follow in and engage the shooter, and the shooter had 40 minutes to go from room to room and shooting the children, why didn't he shoot more? Because 40 minutes is a long time to pull a trigger. And two, who gave the order not to breach? There's things that you're taught, at least within the federal law enforcement standard that I was taught in over 10 years ago, was that pre-Columbine, law enforcement would arrive on the scene of a shooting or, a hostage or whatever, and we would form a cordon, a protective perimeter around wherever the suspect and the victims are. And then from there, depending on what it was, either a negotiations officer would come up or they would be sitting there waiting for the SWAT team. Well, after Columbine, those officers heard the gunfire and did nothing. And it made a national outcry, and it very much warranted it, and it should have. However, after Columbine, now we have a different posture within the realms of how law enforcement responds to an active shooter. Pre-Columbine, we show up, we set a cordon, we wait for SWAT. SWAT teams are not always on the same shift. Some are on vacation. Some work days. Some work nights. Some are on sick leave. So there are gaps of communication trying to get a hold of the team. And then from there, depending on where the team is at, typically they have to be in their ensemble and then pre-briefed before they go on mission in about 4 hours. And I got buddies of mine that are in my local SWAT team here, and it's, you know, pretty much the same thing. You got about 4 hours, depending on what it is, but you should always have your phone or your pager on you, you know, back in the day with the pager. So, 4 hours for a response. You might as well not even have victims after that. 4 hours is enough time for me to kill hundreds of people, depending on how many bullets I have, okay? So after that, after the horror of Columbine, law enforcement supervisors and members of the government and federal agencies got together and they created a new policy for how law enforcement would be trained on how to respond to an active shooter. And I thought this went nationwide. I know it's trained at the federal standard for special agents and for uniform police. I know that at the state police level, at least here in Texas, it's trained the same way because I have friends that are state troopers. And we've all trained together. We understand. We have very similar training. So with the local law enforcement, I would think that it would still be the same thing. And what I'm getting at is the new policy that was created after Columbine was called the IARD. So that's Immediate Action Rapid Deployment. When law enforcement arrives on the scene of a shooting, law enforcement immediately lets whoever is in command know that they're on the scene, and that first person then becomes the incident commander. They will gather whatever resources that they can and breach the building and not wait for specialized units. So that's like, you know, I was on a specialized unit. If something happened and me and the guys are, you know, having to get all of our gear together, we are going to be showing up and then linking up with the first officer who's now the incident commander, who is only replaced in that level of command by someone of rank. So let's say a sergeant or a lieutenant or a captain shows up on scene. The highest ranking person then becomes the incident commander. But if it's just one person, you still breach and you still go into the school. We're all trained to a standard when it comes to room clearing, shooting, talking on the radio. That's why we use plain English. We don't use TIN codes. There are still some agencies and places that use TIN codes, but for the most part, we just use plain English. We don't say, you know, hey, I'm 10-4 over here, and then I'm 10-this, and I'm 10-that, because not everybody has the same 10 code. So we just say, hey, you, this is me. I'm at this door, ready to breach. Come link up with me. I'm walking through the main hallway of the school. You'll see me. I'm in a black uniform. I have a rifle. You know, whatever. You're giving your description to whatever available units are coming. And, you know, here's another thing. If it's multiple agencies coming, we're probably not all on the same radio frequency either. And you may or may not have the time to hit the scan mode to pick up other frequencies. So you're using voice or cell phones. And that can be complicated too. And what's supposed to happen, the way we're trained, is we go straight to the threat. So let's take Uvalde for a second. If it was me and my team, or it was myself responding, and I just had a conglomerate of other guys and gals that joined in with me from other different agencies, we move through the hallway, we glaze through the rooms, even if there are victims in the rooms, and we go straight to the threat, wherever the screaming, the shouting, and the shooting is happening. There's no point in us treating victims when more victims are being made on another side of the location that we're at. So, if the shooter is on another side of a building, a store, a school, hospital, whatever you want to call it, we go straight to the shooter. Problem with this is that within the realms of law enforcement, we also don't know how many shooters there may be. Like, for instance, with Columbine, there were two shooters. If the shooters had decided to split up and go from one side of the school to the other, and all we hear is one shooter, and then we run past rooms, barely even clearing them with our eyes, as we would say, and we go and put down another shooter, well, then we think that we've, you know, taken down the threat, and we notify everybody, and then as other units are coming in, they get ambushed by a secondary or a tertiary shooter, or even they come across improvised explosive devices, like also in Columbine, where they were using pipe bombs. So there is a whole realm of problems that you have to solve as an officer when you respond on scene. I said all that to say this. If it comes out that it's true, that while this shooter was active in his killing, and officers were staged outside holding a cordon to hold the parents back, I want to know who gave that order, and which one of you is the most senior man that was here and decided to follow that order. Because you know damn well, at least within my policy, when I worked for Homeland Security, our policy was you shall respond to the active shooter of distances up to 100 miles away from your location. So if there is an active shooter over 2 hours away, I have the right, by my policy, by my agency, to respond. So that means that there could have been units coming from San Antonio to Uvalde, which is about 2 hours, maybe a little less. And there were units from all over. BORTAC showed up. BORTAC is, you know, right there within Uvalde is only about 30 minutes or to maybe an hour to the border, depending on which direction you're heading. So Border Patrol is all over that area. And you got, you know, game wardens that are all over that area, DPS that did show up, Sheriff's Department, local departments. So it can be this huge mashup of different units. Somebody should have taken charge, gathered a group of people and said, you and you with me, who's got a shield? I don't care if you got a shield or not. I don't care if you had to wait for the shield. I was a shield guy. But I'll tell you this much. If it took me a couple seconds to pick up my shield and people are sprinting in front of me, well, I just fell behind because I had to grab the shield. I'm not going to be able to run as fast as everybody either because my shield was about 20 pounds. But, you know, if I'm not one man by the time I get to the stack, I get it because people were supposed to be sprinting to get through that door. They should have been fighting to get through that door first. Look, all I can say is I've watched the videos, I've read the reports so far that's on New York Post. You know, here we go, New York Post. Police waited to enter Texas school as shooter went on killing spree, says witnesses. And there are a lot of witnesses. Now, look, this is what it says. So, the New York Post article says that the teenage madman who slaughtered 19 kids and two teachers at a Texas school spent more than 40 minutes inside as a witness desperately urged police to charge into the building. It was revealed today, or no, Wednesday. The shooter, Salvador Ramos, barricaded himself inside the classroom before opening fire on students and teachers inside. Border Patrol agents finally breached the door about 40 minutes to an hour later when a staff member gave them a key. Now, the father of one of the dead children is blaming officers at the scene for not acting sooner to stop the gunman. So, right off the bat, it seems to me that we had a barricaded subject. Depending on policies for different agencies and your level of training, a barricaded subject would be someone that you would just sit on that room, not do anything, wait for a negotiator or try to talk them down, try to gain as much information from the subject as possible. While also, you should have other units maneuvering around to any available access that would allow the penetration of a bullet towards the shooter. Now, anything that you do could disturb the shooter and then hence have the shooter act upon with killing. So you don't want to sit there and threaten and malice and all this stuff. But, you know, once again, I wasn't there. You weren't there. So we have to just, you know, play this what if game. So I just asked myself, what kind of room was it? Was there access from the exterior of the building with windows that officers could have got a better shot at or the ability to breach? Was the door most likely a steel hollow door, which would allow the officers to breach, yes or no? How hard would it have been for the officers to have breached the door? So, you know, if there's a bunch of officers on the outside where the parents are, and they're on that perimeter, the perimeter security, and they're holding back family members that are trying to pick up their children or there to, you know, try and obviously respond to what's going on. The reason why you wouldn't want them in is because while there's an active shooter happening, law enforcement is focused on putting down the threat. You introduce more people into this facility that are running around and screaming, acting frantic. You can distract law enforcement. And at that point in time, you could cause other tragedies, or even the worst tragedy would be you run up on law enforcement and then are shot because law enforcement, as I said, does not always know how many shooters are in the building. And there's plenty of case files that you can pull up where law enforcement is ambushed. They thought they were dealing with one person, ended up being two. Or where, you know, law enforcement shows up to an active shooter that was two people. And the reports coming in to 911 was that it was one shooter, then it was two shooters, then it was three shooters. And the first shooter was white, and then the second shooter was black. And then another person will call in and say that all three shooters are men the size of NFL linebackers in full tactical gear. And then you'll have another person say, no, it was one shooter and a female. And I'm talking about an incident that happened in California that was actually a domestic terrorist incident between a man and his wife at a Christmas party at a business. So we don't always trust what we hear. We do our best to see and evaluate as we go into a scene. You know, you gather as much knowledge and information as possible, obviously. But, you know, you don't always trust what everybody says. However, that all being said, once again, why didn't they go in if this article is true? Right? I don't want to be jumping all over this. I know there's already law enforcement that is talking about this right now. I know it is very distressing, and it is, and I'm very upset about it. especially being that I loved being a law enforcement officer, and it was one of the things that I hated having to leave that career. I could not imagine what these parents felt, and unless you were there, neither can you. And I think one of the worst things that we can do is get onto online chat rooms and then talk about our emotional responses to this situation when we don't know the totality of the circumstances yet. Let the full investigation come out. We're already dealing with a tragedy, and the left is already trying to spin people up. There's already been more things happening. I'm going to get off the Uvalde shooter. Because it's quite contested right now. I just want to give you my two thoughts, or my two cents on this thought for what active shooters are, how law enforcement responds, some of the things that we view and we look at. By the way, just to let you know, if you ever are involved in an active shooter, there are three things that we suggest people to do. Run, hide, and fight. Okay? Don't worry about your cell phone. Don't worry about your purse. Don't worry about your backpack. You can come back and gather your effects later. It would be a stupid thing to die over. If there's an active shooter within your vicinity, dial 911 and run. If you are up close and personal to an active shooter, my best advice to you is to fight the shooter until that person stops becoming a threat to you. That is my professional advice. If you don't, you could become a victim. You could still become a victim. But at least you put your life back in your own hands. A lot of times these shooters are not prepared, mentally nor physically, to be dealing with a combative person. They're expecting everyone to run and then they shoot them like they're in a video game. Especially these kids. I think video games are one of the things that actually is starting to train these younger shooters. Now, you can get training from video games. The military uses it. It puts that mindset into kids, and they think that it is a video game and life is that easy until they are face-to-face, typically with another shooter, most of the time law enforcement, and then it almost never ends their way. Or the shooter takes their own life. So, back to what I was saying. If you're ever involved in an active shooter, run, hide, fight. If you are running and you're in any type of vicinity of law enforcement, let's just say you're in a building, you're running down the main hallway, law enforcement has a, we have a team of guys, we're approaching, we have our guns out, obviously, fingers on the trigger. So, what does that mean? That means don't jump out at us, don't grab us. Keep running. Law enforcement will instruct you. Run that way. We'll say, police, police, police. Show me your hands, show me your hands, show me your hands. I want to see your palms. I want your fingers spread. I want you to be telling me there's an active shooter. He's that direction. He's about this old, this tall, this color hair, these color clothes, and a long rifle, a pistol, a shotgun. Right? We want you to give me the most accurate description as possible and then get the hell away from us because we're going towards them. What law enforcement does not need and what upsets the communities when I even give these type of presentations is that if you are injured and law enforcement is coming, we've breached, we're in your vicinity, the active shooter is still actively killing. If you are a walking wounded, or if you have been, hurt to the point that you're laying down on the ground and you're begging and pleading for help, we're probably going to walk right over you and continue to head towards the shooter. The best medicine to stop the mass murderer is to stop the mass murderer, not to stop and help you. That is realistic, no emotional response needed. We have to stop the killer first. So, the next series of events is that as we push forward, we have to clear the scene. We have to be able to stop the shooter, assess how many victims there are, letting the incident commander know who now most likely will be staged outside, coordinating with other different first responders for either the exterior perimeter, coordinating with the press, coordinating with fire and rescue, and also with the ambulances and ambulance service, and then also letting whatever hospitals know, prepare for a mass shooter. You're going to be getting however many bodies we're sending to you. Get your staff prepared. So while all these things are happening, law enforcement inside the responding unit is running to the shooter, and then whatever happens, either the firefight happens or the shooter takes his own life, we then had to backtrace and then go through every single nook and cranny in that building to the point that we consider it to be safe. And that means we have to go back to every single room, make sure there's no improvised explosive devices, make sure that there's no other shooters that are around, and then we call in the fire and rescue, and then the ambulance guys will come in, the EMS. Sometimes, depending on what's happening, like if it's a first or second story, then that takes a really long time, a very long time to clear story by story. And typically story by story, as they're cleared, then the EMS will come in and start treating casualties and extracting people. It's a lot of coordination here. It takes a long time to do this, and every second matters while that finger is pulling the trigger at an innocent person. Law enforcement gets the bad rap no matter what. We're never there on time. We never do exactly as people want. We're not perfect. We're a good guy today and a bad guy tomorrow. So all I ask is that let's let the investigation come out. Let's let the totality of the circumstances come out. We'll learn more about the shooter. We'll learn more about why these officers were outside. We'll learn more about why this young lady, who is one of the parents apparently, was detained or arrested by the officers on the outside for whatever actions that she was doing. And I would hope that she was only detained just to console her and calm her down so that she wouldn't hurt herself or anybody else. There's no right answer. There's no easy answer. It's a tragedy. The other part of this tragedy is what's happening now with the politicians. The other part of this tragedy is what happens when politicians like Beto O'Rourke will try, who's running for governor of Texas, who will try and use this type of a massacre with children for his own political clout. The other tragedy is when people will get on social media and they will damn everyone and everything about a subject that they typically only know from the news, just to get their opinions out there, just to get the thumbs up, just to get the retweets, just to get the reposts. It's sickening to watch it. I told you guys that whenever this happened, I didn't feel right about talking about it, because we should be talking about the incident, not about me and my opinions. I only give you this because as a former law enforcement officer, a veteran cop of 10 years, not many guys like me are telling you what you should be looking at or what's going on and explaining things to you from the inside. I hate what I see happening right now within this country. People have become so divided that already the lives of these children that have been lost has been politicized, and it's turned to guns now. And it's turned to, well, the left says that you're this, and well, the right says that you're that. But yet we have forgot that we are all children of God and that we are all Americans. I think America is ripe for a civil war based off of responses to incidents like this. Do you remember what happened in 9/11? How we all came together for a couple of years, and then it all just kind of went away. We're quickly onto that now, because if a meteor was going to glance by the world tomorrow, the news would talk about it for the next 72 hours, and you won't hear anything except for a 2-minute blurb on the news about Uvalde. They've already forgotten Buffalo. They've already forgotten the mass shooting that happened in Brooklyn at the subway. This is the divisiveness of the media. This is, I believe, part of the psychological warfare apparatus, and it's working for what they want. They want us to hate each other. They want us to have a we versus them mentality, and it's worked. It's not working. It's worked. It's happened. And I don't think there's any going back to it. I want to play an audio from Chuck Schumer today, and then I'll talk about it, and then the next audio is going to be from the Morning Club, and that's, what is this, MSNBC, Morning Joe. Stand by. Try not to punch whatever it is that you're listening to. Let's hear what Chuck Schumer has to say.
Madam President, today the Senate will have a chance to act on a pernicious issue that has recently become an increasingly prevalent component in America's gun violence epidemic, the evil spread of white supremacy and domestic terrorism. In the past 2 weeks, the United States has endured two of the most traumatic mass shootings that we have seen in recent history. In my home state of New York, in the beloved city of Buffalo, 10 black Americans were gunned down in broad daylight by a white supremacist armed with an AR-15 and whose mind was poisoned by online conspiracies, white supremacist conspiracies. And 2 days ago, 19 children, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, kids on the verge of beginning summer, kids with their entire lives ahead of them, we saw them holding up their trophies and proudly in their T-shirts. And a few hours later, they were gone, slaughtered in the predominantly Latino town of Uvalde, Texas. Two teachers, including a mother of four, were killed alongside them. Many more were injured and remain in critical conditions. It was the worst school shooting in America since Sandy Hook. Last night, I looked at the pictures of each of those kids online, and I wept. Taken from us. Taken from their families. Through senseless gun violence. I can't stop thinking about the parents, too, who lost their kids. I can't stop imagining the paralyzing horror of being one of the parents showing up to the school after the shooting, wondering where their kid was, the anxiety that will live with these parents forever. Forced to wait hours before a DNA test confirmed that their son or daughter was gone. I cannot imagine a hell worse than that. And these families, my colleagues, don't want thoughts and prayers. They want their elected leaders to respond to their suffering. They don't want to be lifted up. They don't want good intentions. They want something to change. They want results. Yet, the MAGA Republicans don't want to get to results. They are ossified in their opposition to any action on gun safety. No matter the cause of violence and no matter the cost on the families, nothing seems to move them. Yesterday, after Beto O'Rourke confronted Texas Governor Abbott's press conference, the MAGA governor gave some empty platitudes about healing and hope. He asked people to put their agendas aside and think about someone other than themselves. My God, how dare he? What an absolute fraud the governor of Texas is. And this is the same Governor Abbott who tomorrow, will go speak at the NRA convention in Houston. Governor Abbott, will you ask your MAGA buddies and your NRA pals to put aside their agendas and think of someone other than themselves? like you asked the families to do? Will you ask the gun manufacturing reps who were swarm over the NRA convention to put aside their agendas and think about someone other than themselves? Of course not. The governor, Governor Abbott, is more likely to outline some new plan to further loosen gun restrictions. No amount of bloodshed seems to be enough for MAGA Republicans. This nation is enraged, as well as being exhausted. It's been through this over and over and over again over the last two decades. People are sick of mourning again and again while listening to the same string of hollow words from the MAGA Republicans that never lead to action. So, Madam President, so in a few moments, the Senate will have to have a chance to vote on one important cause of gun violence. The legislation before the Senate today is the Domestic Terrorism Protection Act, which I scheduled for a vote earlier this week, before what happened in Uvalde occurred. It was done to respond to the massacre at a supermarket in Buffalo. The bill is so important because the mass shooting in Buffalo was an act of domestic terrorism. We need to call it what it is, domestic terrorism. It was
So there's Chuck Schumer politicizing events while there's still bloodstains in the school. And he wants to talk about how he wants to take your guns. He wants to talk about how it's the MAGA country and the Republicans' fault. How it's Greg Abbott's fault. And that Beto O'Rourke is some kind of a hero. The divisiveness, the callousness of the men and women that run our country. It is exactly the reason why our country is being ran into the ground. We have a millstone above our heads right now. And God is just waiting to send it. And it's because of men and women like Chuck Schumer. Inhuman with his comments. And this man claims to be a Christian. I rebuke you in the name of Christ. I wish this man would just go away. Shut your face and go away. You help no one. You hurt everything. Nothing that you say is American, patriotic, or worth listening to, Chuck. Shut your face and go away. But he won't. This man makes too much money to go away. Up until the point that he's almost 80, he'll still be running for office. Because of greed, of course. Speaking of greed, malice. Listen to what these idiots at MSNBC say.
It's a constant scam. They're constantly whipping people into a frenzy. They're coming for your guns. And they preach, and we saw it during COVID. There's this hyper-toxic individuality.
Exactly.
That has risen over the past 20 years. You don't have to wear a mask if a million people are dead. You don't, like, have to say no to anything. You do whatever you want to do. This is what Kevin Williamson talked about, how the right is having their hippie moment now. It's like, hey, man, don't tell me what to do. No responsibility to your family, no responsibility to your neighbors, no responsibility to children who go to schools, and no responsibility to fellow church members, no responsibility to anybody. It's all about you, you, you. You do whatever the hell you want to do. You buy whatever weapon of war you want to buy. And if anybody, tries to make you pull back a little bit from pursuing exactly what you want to do with guns, with masks, with anything. Oh, my God, they're communists.
Yeah. And that attitude, Joe, is framed as patriotism because you're standing up to tyranny, because the government wants you to wear a mask and protect your neighbor. The government wants you to be more responsible about guns to protect 8-year-old kids inside elementary schools. That is patriotism, or at least that's the way it's pitched.
But you know what else they're doing right now? They're telling 13-year-old girls in a lot of states, if you get raped by your uncle, we're taking that choice from you. You don't have that choice. Now, I have the choice.
That would make you a baby killer.
I have the choice not to wear a piece of paper over my face or to go into Target and knock over displays of masks. But you don't have a choice if you're a 13-year-old girl who got raped by your uncle to decide what you and your parents want to do with your life. That's, and baby killers? Seriously? We know what party is filled with baby killers. We do. If you don't.
Yesterday in Texas.
If you don't, then just look at that press conference and look at the people up on the stage
who had
babies killed in their classrooms and still wouldn't talk about it. This is really grotesque. Really grotesque. You're not going to get away with it.
For Joe Scarborough to sit there smirking like the commentary comic that I guess he thinks he is, or celebrity, and to say that we know what party are baby killers, speaking about the Republican Party, the conservatives, to say that and then have over 70 million children annihilated on the altars of science. There's a special place in hell for you, Joe Scarborough. I pray you get saved and you correct your ways. And for this man, once again, to play Christian. See? You need to consider this, folks. Civil war will happen in this country. Some of us right now may actually live to see the pages of Revelation come to fruition. And you are going to witness, as many have witnessed throughout history, those who pretend to be Christians coming after other Christians because of beliefs. So look at the Inquisition from the Catholics. Don't say the Spanish, say the Catholics. You know, nothing, I don't want to offend my Catholic listeners, but the king of your religion, the Pope, those popes have killed millions in the name of the way that they view Christianity should be worshipped. And for this guy to sit here, Joe Scarborough, and to say guns are the problem and Republicans are the real reason why children are dying. Is that true, Joe? Well, then why is it that the shooter for Uvalde was a leftist, was a confused kid from a protected community? He came from a broken home, obviously was under much mental distress. where was the man in his life to set him straight? His grandfather didn't. No offense to his grandfather. You know, not everybody is going to be saved. Not everybody is going to be a rescue story. Some people just want to watch the world burn. Some people will kill other people, no matter what is exposed to them as the truth and as true passions of love about them. You can love some of these people all you want, but something is turned off in their head that won't allow them to compute that. Never forget that the CIA and the Department of Defense both vigorously, probably continuously, worked on mind-altering states that would turn people into whatever they needed them to be. MKUltra, Project Monarch, the Mind Wars, it's all there. Before I close this out, I just want you to know you need to keep situational awareness at all times. Beware of the copycat killer. This is a phenomena that we can't really explain, but it's always there. Just as today, we already have two accounts for it. This is from Breaking911.com. Dallas area student arrested after being seen walking toward high school with AK-47 style pistol, Orbeez rifle. This is in Richardson, Texas. Richardson is just north of Dallas. That's a very rich area. The student was arrested, seen walking near the school with a gun. On May 25th, 2022 at 10:55 a.m., Richardson Police Department received a phone call from a business in the 1500 block of East Spring Valley Road reporting a male holding what appeared to be a rifle. Within minutes of the call being dispatched, numerous police officers from various units within the Richardson Police Department responded to Berkner High School and initiated a search and investigation into this incident. Nearby schools were notified of the police activity based on the information provided in collaboration with Richardson ISD. Officers were able to identify the male suspect as a juvenile student of Berkner High School. The suspect was located inside Berkner High School, but no weapons were found. Further investigation led to the discovery of a vehicle used by the suspect in the parking lot of 1551 East Spring Valley Road. Inside the vehicle, officers observed what appeared to be an AK-47 style pistol and a replica AR-15 styles Orbeez rifle. The juvenile suspect was arrested and charged with unlawful carrying weapons in a weapon-free school zone and a state jail felony. No further information is being released on the suspect due to his age. So we have that, and then we also have this.
Monitor reporting that the Donna School District there is shutting down its campuses today and tomorrow after police foiled a mass shooting credible plot at their campuses. Apparently, there were 2 to 3 people plotting to shoot up a school down there. With the local media there, the Monitor reporting that they found a AK-47 and a list of students to target in one of the homes of one of the suspects. So schools down there in the RGV Donna ISD closed today after a mass shooting threat was foiled.
So RGV is Rio Grande Valley, and that's coming from Fox News. That was at 8:05 this morning. The world is crazy. It's filled full of dangerous people. I implore you to arm yourselves legally, get the training, get the license to carry legally concealed. Pull your kids out of public schools. I want to end today with the devotional that is from God is Faithful from David Wilkerson. Maybe we can land on a light heart. I haven't got to read it yet. So for May 26th, having a perfect heart. Do you know it is possible to walk before the Lord with a perfect heart? If you are hungering for Jesus, you may already be trying, desiring earnestly to obey this command of the Lord. Having a perfect heart has been part of the life of faith from the time God first spoke to Abraham. I am Almighty God. Walk before me and be blameless, perfect. That's Genesis 17:1. I want to encourage you. Having a perfect heart is possible. Otherwise, God would not have given us such a call. In the Old Testament, we see that some succeeded. David, for instance, determined to obey God's command to be perfect. He said, I will behave wisely in a perfect way. I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. Psalm 101, verse 2. To come to grips with the idea of perfection, we first must understand that perfection does not mean a sinless, flawless existence. Perfection in the Lord's eyes is something entirely different. It means having completeness and maturity. The Hebrew meanings of perfection include uprightness, having neither spot nor blemish, being totally obedient. It means to finish what has been started, to make a complete performance. John Wesley called this concept of perfection constant obedience. That is, a perfect heart is a responsive heart, one that answers quickly and totally all of God's wooing, whispering, and warning. Such a heart says at all times, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. Show me the path, and I will walk in it." The perfect heart cries out with David, "Search me, O God, and know my heart." Psalm 139, verse 23. God does indeed search our hearts. I, the Lord, search the heart. Jeremiah 17:10. The perfect heart seeks to be in God's presence always, to dwell in communion, talking with the Lord, sharing sweet fellowship with Him, seeking His face and knowing His presence in our daily walk. Ask in faith for this kind of heart today. I really pray that we have more men and women seeking God, not only for discernment and protection, but to have a perfect heart so that we may love one another as Jesus commanded us to. Maybe then all this hatefulness and evil would stop. But we know that it won't. So be prepared. Don't be a fool. Don't take your life for granted. Get outside, have fun. Live out your life. Fill it with love and happiness and joy. May God keep you and protect you. My name's Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. I'm out of here.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, "Vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord." End of transmission.